Whether you're a first-time poultry owner or looking to expand your flock, you can always use some helpful advice. Blaine's Farm and Fleet's got you covered. With great info and products to help raise healthy birds in-store or online at farmandfleet.com/chickdays.
It's time to find your next ag venture with the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association. Hundreds of Wisconsin specialty crop producers are eager to welcome you to their farms for food, recreation, and education. We're introducing you to these destinations courtesy of Specialty Crop Block Grant 2310. And now, here's your host, Stephanie Hoff.
Welcome back as we continue to feature specialty crops across Wisconsin and the producers who not only grow them, but welcome you to the farm for an agricultural experience. Today, we're going to take a walk through the rolling pastures of Bull Brook Keep in Clear Lake, Wisconsin. They're about 65 miles northeast of the Twin Cities. In the pasture, you'll come across what looks like, at first glance, weeds. But in reality, these plants can prevent sickness or cure ailments. Sylvia Burgos-Toffness joins us. She considers herself a medicinal herbal student, and she's actually doing a formal education to become an herbalist. She's been studying for 8 years. Sylvia, what does this entail? What is an herbalist?
Thank you so much for that question, Stephanie. An herbalist is someone who is interested in what we can, in fact, get in the way of benefit from the herbs that are all around us. And an herbalist is gaining in popularity all across the country and around the world because we are being reawakened to the really big flavor and food as well as remedy benefits from not only those green plants that grow in a field all summer long, like a plantain or a little herb called sheep's head sorrel, but also there's a lot of medicinal or helpful value in the barks, leaves, berries of shrubs and trees. So an herbalist is someone who's becoming more and more aware of all of this and uses them for the benefit of their well-being.
When people think herbs, they may think of what they're using to cook in their kitchen, stuff in their spice cabinet. But the herbs and plants that are part of this botanical medicine, this is stuff that could be growing in your own yard, either as a weed or as a landscaping plant. Can you give me some examples of things that you find, you know, everyday people can find in their yard that serves a purpose?
You bet. And in fact, that is the purpose of one of the activities that I offer on my farm, which is called an herbal safari, which is a guided herb walk. Not so that you can so much discover what's on my farm, but I begin to identify what's in your own backyard. So some of those things include pine trees, birch trees, poplars. You may have plantain growing in your backyard as a weed that, oh my goodness, lots of people kind of tear their hair out as they try to eliminate it from their lawns, but which has so much really helpful property, as well as creeping charlie, lamb's quarters, amaranth. These are all things that people spend a lot of money and time trying to eradicate, but which offer lots of helpful qualities.
I was shocked when you said creeping charlie, because that is what I spend most of my summer trying to pull out of the lawn, try all different kinds of, you know, broadleaf solutions. But let's pick one of those plants. And what does it do for us? Is it to solve an ailment?
The approach of an herbalist is to look for those things that don't necessarily eradicate a bacteria or a virus or deal with a remedy, but really the whole point of holistic herbalism is to strengthen your body so that you are able to deal with whatever you're dealt in the way of a stress or a disease. So let's take a look at one of those plants, one that is so common, and that's plantain. It's everywhere people walk, and it had a nickname, in fact, called White Man's Footprint, because it tends to be where we disturb the land. So a plantain, the leaf, is excellent for dealing with bug bites and bee stings. You actually pull a leaf, or more of them out of the ground, and it's a low-growing plant, and you chew on it until it becomes a bit of a pulp, and then you can put it on your irritated skin. And even little kids like to use it because the leaves are so broad and flexible that they almost become like a Band-Aid that the kid can keep on the skin. Another plant is that Creeping Charlie that we just talked about. And Creeping Charlie is in the mint family. And as a mint, it has calming attributes. The little flowers are also really terrific for pollination. Let's take another one, sage. Yes, that lives in our cupboards, right? We use it for cooking. And we tend to use it fairly sparingly in North America. But sage is a powerful herb, especially if you can have a little bit of it, just a little bit, growing on your windowsill, that you can make a tea out of that is really effective for sore throats. It's an awfully powerful herb. As is thyme. Thyme, rosemary, they are fairly antifungal and antimicrobial. And when I think about those culinary herbs, you know, the things you may already have sitting in your pantry. Black pepper is really important. Black pepper has the ability of kind of increasing the activity of your circulation and of your digestion. And so herbalists very often include black pepper as one of the ingredients when they're making certain kinds of remedies because it would help to activate the ability of the body to use it.
Yeah, I was taking notes as you were talking because it's fascinating stuff. And it's part of your farm, Bull Brook Keeps. It's part of your agritourism story because you're offering these herbal safaris. Who typically is seeking you out? And are you finding success with offering this type of service or experience?
The kind of person that tends to come to an herbal safari is someone who really is, one, curious, just wondering, you know, what is all that green stuff out there? And who is also taking some time usually to stay healthy. They might be people who are saying, you know, I think I need to like to look at my diet and see if I can do something better. They sometimes are people that have dealt with health issues or challenges over the years. They want to have some time outside. And one of the things I really stress in the herbal safari is that it's an easy way to start from wherever you are in your wellness journey. So if you've never done anything like this, an herbal safari is a great way to introduce you to it. If, in fact, you've been studying herbs for 5 or 10 years, but want to get out there and really reexamine what's available seasonally as the summer and growing season continues, it's also for you. One of the things we know about herbs is that there are thousands of them. But you know what? If you leave an herbal safari knowing two well, or you're on your way to knowing them well, you're in a good spot.
Sylvia Burgos-Toughness joining us from Bull Brook Keep. This farm is located on 72 rolling acres in Clear Lake, Wisconsin. Sylvia, you had told me that you got into herbalism and these herbal safaris because you were grazing cattle and you became curious about the plants that they interacted with. You've since transitioned from beef to medicinal permaculture. Tell me about the transition and if consumer demand for the medicinal permaculture is able to sustain the farm in this new venture.
I guess what I find, Stephanie, is that a lot of people who wanted grass-fed, grass-finished beef that was grown without hormones, no grain, no subclinical antibiotics, are also those who are looking to other avenues to improve their well-being. This is a very deliberate, slow transition to herbal safaris, a very deliberate transition, and I'm finding that there is interest. There is interest. So, again, it's something that is new to our area, and so people are just beginning to find it. But those people that find it are signing up, and I know I have one person who signed up for every single event this year having to do with herbalism, every safari and every remedy making class. So these are going to be interesting, I think, outreach to people. One of the things that I did when I was grazing, I had an event called Cowgirl High Teas. Those were very, very popular. It was an interesting term, you know, a cowgirl high tea. What does that get? You know, how do you even do that? It worked out beautifully. People came from hours away. And so for Herbal Safari, not only am I doing the guided tours, the very scheduled remedy-making classes, but I will have kind of events that will get people around a table as they take a sampling of how to make remedies. So I'm doing something on Mother's Day, which is an Herbal Safari plus a sit-down with some tea, and that's already filling up. We'll see how it goes. I think that it does dovetail with the public's growing interest in how do I get to a farm and do something that's fun? And according to so many surveys, including Food and Wine, Purdue University, and various other kinds of travel organizations, when you can tie an agricultural event to culinary practice, as well as locally available ingredients and health, I believe that that intersection is going to help lots of farmers all over the upper Midwest. And I certainly see it as being a growing public interest that will help Herbal Safaris meet their demands.
Sylvia, you just said the elements of agritourism can help farmers in the upper Midwest and in Wisconsin. I just want you to talk more about how agritourism has been able to allow you to transition as your needs change, too, as a farm owner.
Well, agricultural tourism, I think, is a very important revenue stream for many farms and can be all over the upper Midwest, because it allows the farmer to use their personal property and their farm-based income as the basis for attracting visitors. What we're finding out, and you know, even the 2017 Ag Census stated, people are looking to come to farms for unique experiences. Well, farms offer that. When you consider that, according to the 2022 Census, only 1.2% of the American population is actually in the field or with livestock or dealing with timber. The interest and the hunger for the public, the general public, to visit a farm is growing because they have been so far removed from farming. So the farm offers unique experiences. And when a farmer can get visitors on the farm, there is an avenue for additional income, which is so important to small family farms. The agricultural markets fluctuates wildly sometimes, and this provides another stabilizing revenue stream for the farm. It certainly has helped us in that we have transitioned from the everyday labor of grass-fed, grass-finished beef, which is fairly labor-intensive, to now offering not only the pasture walks that we did in the past, but now offering guided herb tours. And this also takes advantage of the public's interest in things that are environmentally based. They want to visit places that are examples of sustainability and regeneration and health and local ingredients and local culture. Because every farmer, every farm has its own unique story, they do offer a unique experience. And I think more and more farmers throughout Wisconsin and throughout the upper Midwest are beginning to realize that they have the land and activity opportunities to meet the public demand for education and fun, relaxation, lots of hands-on learning that can happen on a farm.
For our farm audience who's listening to this, Sylvia, maybe they've been thinking about adding an ag tourism element to the farm. What is your advice from the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association standpoint? Should they join WADA? Should they get involved in the new peer-to-peer mentorship program?
Well, if you're a farmer out there and you're thinking about inviting visitors to your farm, I would suspect you've got lots of questions like, wow, how much do I charge? And is this going to affect my insurance? What about parking? And is there any ordinance that I have to be aware of? Those are all good questions. And they're the right kind of questions to ask before you begin your activity. But you may also wonder, like, where do I go to find out how to do this? And my strong advice would be to go to the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association. This is an organization, it's a nonprofit that's over 30 years old, which has helped farmers who want to invite visitors onto their farms. It is a network of members, around 200 members, of farmers, many of them very highly experienced in welcoming visitors to their farms. Some are very large farms, others are quite small, but they have dealt with things like marketing, pricing, how to work with local ordinances, what you do in the various seasons, how to make sure that people are safe as they come to your farm, and how to limit your liability. So I would strongly recommend going to the website of the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association, take a look at what that organization offers. I am a member and on the board as well, and it has helped me a lot. And so much of that help has been through peer-to-peer conversations.
What is something that you wish you knew going into the ag tourism, the agricultural tourism industry, that you are looking forward to helping others learn the, you know, easier than how you had it?
I think one of the things that I wish I had known was more about the limited liability laws. Wisconsin is in a phenomenal position in that it has a agricultural tourism limited liability law. That is a law that helps protect you as a farmer when people come onto your land. I began to post the limited liability law sign, which is required by law, at the very entrance of the farm just 2 years ago. And it would have been good to have that had up 10 years ago when I started. That's just one of those things that really kind of helps you and helps with your insurance coverage and makes sure that everyone feels comfortable when they come on the farm.
And Sylvia, you're a perfect example of how a network can help people who may have a non-traditional start to farming, because your story started in the Big Apple.
As a woman who grew up in the middle of New York City, back then as I was graduating college, I would have never imagined that I'd be, one, grazing cattle for over a dozen years in Wisconsin, or that I would enjoy so much welcoming people to the land. It's an activity I absolutely love, to see people look around and begin to realize the richness of farming, of farmland, and of just being outside in nature and taking a breath.
No matter where you are in your agricultural tourism journey, maybe you're looking to transition the farm or you're looking to add value to the farm, you have resources available to you through the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association and their new peer-to-peer mentorship program. Sylvia Burgos-Toffness joins us, a board member with WADA, an herbalist student, and owner of Bull Brook Keep in Clear Lake, Wisconsin. And this is where she introduces people to a unique specialty crop, medicinal plants and herbs that may be in your own backyard. Get ready for our next episode where we will head to honeybee hives in East Central Wisconsin. I'm Stephanie Hoff. We'll talk to you again soon.
This podcast series is brought to you courtesy of Specialty Crop Block Grant 2310. The Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association is promoting the increased demand for and sales of specialty crops and agricultural tourism experiences through the Wisconsin America's Agricultural Tourism Destination Campaign. Learn more at GoWIAgTourism.com.